Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, November 19, 2015. Gunmen killed 7 people traveling on the Juba-Nimule Road.
A South Sudanese man shooting on civilians, and I was shooted on my leg. I can't ever even to get out of the bus, but I tried. But because of God Almighty, He has saved me.
And at least 3 people are killed in an attack on Ezo County.
First of all, the order is in proper order.
But my procedure is in order because
it is not in order. Please,
the attendance here is less than 2/3. The attendance is 195.
Sit down.
198. It was announced by the speaker.
If it were less, I would not have actually.
If you are not taking it, Mr. Speaker, and according to you,
order,
we are
order.
Going to walk out.
Are you making a disorder now?
Because this is unprocedural.
That was an argument at South Sudan Parliament. We will have that story and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Eastern Equatoria state officials say at least 7 people were killed and scores of others injured when a group of unidentified gunmen attacked a bus and several trucks along the Juba-Nimule Road this morning. For VOA News, Philip Thona-Liu has details from Juba.
Officials say the vehicle were attacked about 7 o'clock local time as they were headed to Uganda. Eastern Equatorial State Information Minister is Mark Akyoi.
The people who died in the past were 3, and the other 4 are drivers of the lorries, 4 lorries that were following the bus. The report we received from the ground is that these people were attacked at mid-junction, around a mid-junction.
Peter March was a bus passenger who was shot in the back during the ambush. Mike says the gunman sprayed the bus with bullets. He says the driver managed to abruptly stop the bus near Moli Town, some 50 kilometers north of Numeli.
Then we were attacked by soldiers. That is why we are shooting. I ran to the bush and I myself.
Mike and 3 other injured passengers were later pounded by police and brought to Juba Teaching Hospital. Etia Kiden is another bus passenger who survived the ambush. Kiden says he remembers the faces of the attackers.
You can't count, there are many men, all in military uniform. A South Sudanese man shooting on civilians. And I was shooted on my leg. I can't ever even to get out of the bus, but I tried. But because of God Almighty, He has saved me.
Kiden says she was traveling to Uganda to bring her children back to South Sudan after having completed their end-of-year examinations in Kampala. Akwe says security forces are searching for the attackers.
They have taken control of the situation, and the attackers have run away, and they are trying to pursue them to identify them, who they are, and what is the motive of their attack, especially at the time when the people of South Sudan are implementing the peace agreement.
Akoi says investigators are following up leads on the suspects, but did not elaborate. Officials and survivors say several passengers remain unaccounted for. For VOA News, I am Philip Thona-Liu in Juba.
Jacob Achek in Nimule contributed to this report. The commissioner of Western Equatorial States, Ezo County, says refugees are scattered after fighting broke out between armed youth and SPLA yesterday, leaving at least 3 people dead. VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Washington.
Ezo County Commissioner Luciano Bakinde says the fighting continued through this morning when gunshots were heard in the area. He says the violence erupted when some SPLA soldiers visited the refugee camp without informing Ezo or their commander. On their way back, they were attacked by armed youth groups who Bakinde says are scattered all over the state. Bakinde says a soldier and 2 civilians are among the dead and at least 2 others were injured. He says the refugee camp is now empty.
Now the refugees are no longer there. They've deserted the camp and their whereabouts is unknown. Some has gone even crossing the border to Congo, and some have gone crossing the border to Central Africa.
and some are hiding in the bush.
According to Bakinde, the refugees living in Izo were displaced by the Lord's Resistance Army from the Democratic Republic of Congo and the Central African Republic. Izo runs along the borders of both countries. Bakinde says the refugees are being helped by the UN refugee agency, UNHCR. Officials in the UNHCR office in Juba declined to comment on the attack. This fighting just comes hours after the government and two groups of gunmen with the so-called Arrow Boys signed a preliminary agreement to end hostilities in Western Equatoria State. Yesterday, the chairperson of the government delegation to the agreement, Victor Kuyawando, says one of the group's leaders who refused to sign the deal, saying he is aligned with the SPLM-IO, controls the Izo area.
The UNHCR and the government had already signed this compromise with this agreement in Addis Ababa. But as we speak with you now, there is chaos along that road, especially from Manzara going to Ezo and Sorsivo.
Bakinde says he is yet to convene a meeting with the security officials, but says the area is now calm.
Until tomorrow, if things go well, then I'll try to mobilize the organized forces so that we can hold the security meeting, whereby we can decide to announce to the people that the situation is calmed down.
Western Equatoria State fighting started in April between farmers and cattle keepers and spread to other parts of the state. Over 1,400 civilians have fled the area to Central Equatoria's Yei County. Many others remain hiding in the bush. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Washington.
South Sudan's parliament today amended the transitional constitution to give President Salva Kiir the power to appoint new lawmakers and governors, which would pave the way for splitting the country into 28 states. Lawmakers with the Sudan People's Liberation Movement for Democratic Change walked out of the session. Waki Simon Wudu has the story from Juba.
Before the vote was called to change the constitution, an argument erupted between the leader of the minority SPLM-DC and the speaker, who is backed by the ruling SPLM party members.
First of all,
the order is in proper order.
But my procedure is in order because
it is not in order. Please,
the attendance here is less than two-thirds.
Minority leader Onyoti Adigo Nyekwech argues with the speaker Manasseh Magok Rundiel over a point of procedure, questioning whether a quorum was present to hold the vote on amending the constitution. Minutes later, minority MPs walked out. Despite the disagreement, the vote was held and the amendment passed. Speaker Rundiel:
I thank you very much for passing this. Although your opponents may be lying, and they should see the number. The number will not actually be created by us. In itself, those people who will cheat, they'll be satisfied. So we have passed this with the two-thirds NLA and two-thirds unanimously.
Under Article 162 of the Constitution, President Kiir will have the power to divide the territory of the Republic of South Sudan into states and other areas in accordance with the procedures prescribed by law. And Article 164 gives the President the power to appoint members of state assemblies during the interim period of governance. Article 165 allows the president to appoint governors of each state during the transitional period. Lawmaker Michael Makwe, who is a lawyer, says the amendments are legal.
This amendment is in accordance with the presentation which was made by the Minister of Justice in accordance with the initiative raised by His Excellency the President. This amendment is actually paving the way for the introduction of the new states established in accordance with the provisions of the Establishment Order number 36/2015. This amendment will give way for the establishment of the 28 states as came in the Establishment Order.
Makwe says the order of the president establishing the 28 states has now been referred to the Council of States for a vote. Opposition leader Lamakola Jawin had asked it that a constitutional court revoke the president's decision to declare 28 states, but the court has not ruled on that request.
In aggregate, thank you.
Adigo insists that today's vote was unconstitutional.
All the members of parliament, and which I showed you just now, we are 297. This is the list. I have it here. 297. We were supposed to be 332. But 10 died. 20-something has got dismissed who rebel. Okay? It remains 197. 297. Now, two-thirds of 297 is supposed to be 198. Now, the attendance before was 189, less by 10. Now, when we walk out, it will become 183, which is less by what? 16. So it is unconstitutional.
Adigo referred to today's decision as a jungle law of governance.
It's simply a jungle law used by the speaker, by only meeting few people who are less than two-thirds, which was supposed to vote. It's very unfortunate to South Sudan. I would have just appealed to those of IGAD and IGAD Plus and the government that this parliament should have been dissolved. Then people look for new people again.
Minority MPs were not the only lawmakers who walked out of today's session. 37 members from the Greater Equatorial Region boycotted the sitting. MP Thomas Wanikondo explains why lawmakers refused to vote on amending the constitution.
We have passed the agreement unanimously. An agreement is now binding and is the supreme law all over the country. What we are waiting for now is formation of the NCAC, National Committee for Amendment, National Constitutional Amendment Committee, to come out with a new amended draft constitution incorporating all the provisions of the agreement, then follow the same procedure through the Minister of Justice up to the Council of Ministers, and then table in the Parliament. Then we pass it in order to guide implementation of the agreement.
Observers with the Sout Institute and others have said the president's move to split the country into 28 states at this time is not moving the country forward toward peace. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a documentary about South Sudanese doctors who are making a difference. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what would you rather do? Win a prize or be famous?
I would like to win a prize, like a house. If you are famous, sometimes you can't have your privacy, and then sometimes you are being watched by people.
I'd rather be famous, because usually I don't like gambling, I don't like chances, and I believe when you're famous, you can get a lot of privileges and you can be able to impact the world in a positive way.
To be famous is okay, because if you are famous, you will be known. Yeah, people, many people will know you according to what you are famous of, doing another work professionally, or you are famous in other ways. Now, to win a prize, because your prize you will win now and finish. Yeah, it's better to be famous.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The staggering shortage of healthcare professionals in South Sudan leads many to rely on non-traditional trained health workers, whose work is featured in a new documentary film now showing in select U.S. theaters. The directors say they were inspired by the commitment of the doctors even when surrounded by insecurity. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
The film We Are the Ones is the story of the resilience of Francis Guy and Ajak Abraham, who are determined to heal their country, one patient at a time. Both South Sudanese men were trained by American Dr. Glenn Gilhode. Director Michael Skinner says Dr. Gilhode's approach to treating South Sudanese is what inspired him to shoot the film.
Very often the model in the West is the assumption that that Americans know best or Europeans know best, and they need to come in and save people. And Glenn's perspective is different. He looks at at his role not as coming in to save people, but coming in to teach people who want to take responsibility for healthcare in that country and helping them to build their skills so that they can do it year-round when he's not there.
The film's other director, John Schenck, says initially the story was planned to be about the transference of knowledge from Dr. Gilhode to Guy and Abraham. But things took a turn when fighting broke out and spread across the country.
As we were following these men, there was an outbreak of tribal violence in the villages that we visited. And so the story started to evolve as the violence sort of encroached and got closer to the clinics. And then those men actually sort of came together to use medicine as a bridge for peace between those rival tribes. And so what started off as very much a medical story turned into one with sort of much bigger picture in mind.
Schenck says people like Guy and Abraham are the pillars of their community. He says because of the widespread lack of health care in South Sudan, he saw many people travel for days to visit the doctors.
Even though they don't have what we would consider full training to really do some of the things that they do, they're still able to provide great services to the folks in these villages. And whether that's treating them for a basic illness, stomach issues, that sort of thing, or performing certain surgeries, they're really able to do some wonderful things.
During his work in South Sudan, Guy has learned to perform a number of surgeries, including an eyelid eversion procedure that combats trachoma, which is the leading cause of blindness in South Sudan. Abraham is working with a medical mission called Upon This Rock to deliver basic health care.
And I think that they show just how resilient a people the South Sudanese are. You know, it is a very hopeful story. There's a lot wrong in South Sudan. There are a lot of systemic issues. There's a lot of conflict. But that resilience, I think, provides some hope for what can happen in this brand new country.
Both Skinner and Schenck say efforts to train more people like Guy and Abraham could go a long way toward helping the country heal. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
Ethiopian Airlines has dispatched its first ever flight operated by all-female crew. The flight departed for Bangkok, Thailand last night. The airline says it wants to promote women's empowerment and encourage more African girls to pursue aviation careers. Marta Vanderwolf reports for VOA from Addis Ababa International Airport.
Ethiopian Airlines CEO Tewolde Gebremariam says attracting more women to aviation jobs is one of the reasons for hosting the female flight together with empowering women.
It's going to be very inspiring for all the women all over the world, aviation women, and particularly the African women. Because, as you know, here in the continent of Africa, we are lagging behind in women empowerment. So this is going to inspire all the schoolgirls in Africa that they have a very bright future in the 21st century.
The flight is being handled by women in every aspect, from planning to aircraft maintenance, and from the pilots to air traffic controllers. Even upon arrival in Bangkok, all customs and immigration officers will be female. Ethiopian Airlines says about one-third of its employees are women, but the number is smaller when it comes to positions such as pilots and technicians. 22-year-old Haimanot Endale is a cabin maintenance technician and has been working at Ethiopian Airlines for 2 years. She says even though there are many girls working as flight attendants, as a technician, she mostly works with men.
I think that outside of the Ethiopian Airlines, girls think that the work is very difficult. So they are not enter this company, but we enter and we see that it's very easy.
Many Ethiopian women, known for their success in business and politics, attended the event, including Ethiopia's first lady, Roman Tesfai. Ethiopian Airlines is Africa's most profitable airline. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
From Addis Ababa, we move to Harare, where Zimbabwe is introducing a new land tax for resettled black farmers, many of whom are already struggling. Some have been teaming up with white commercial farmers displaced more than a decade ago by the controversial land reform program. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare.
The government says it will start charging black farmers who have benefited from Zimbabwe's land reform program between $3 and $10 a hectare per year in January 2016. The government is looking for revenue amid a seemingly sinking economy. The move is not worth because the land tax was one of the reasons that nationalists like President Robert Mugabe started the War of Liberation in the 1960s. Under Zimbabwe's land reform program, which began in year 2000, the government confiscated thousands of white-owned commercial farms and redistributed the land to black farmers. Mr. Mugabe said it was aimed at correcting colonial imbalances. But because they lacked financial capital and equipment, the newly resettled farmers have struggled with the demands of commercial farming. To help themselves, many have started partnering with displaced white commercial farmers, employing them as land managers or consultants. Douglas Mombeshora, Zimbabwe's lands and resettlement minister, says this is illegal.
To this we say no. While we understand that as government we have not been able to fully support our farmers and financial institutions are not keen to lend money to them, we don't see subleasing as a solution. Government has agreed to joint ventures, partnerships and contract farming, provided the farmers bring their applications to the minister for approval.
He says those applications will not be approved if one of the partners is a former white commercial farmer. Still, the arrangements have continued to spread since about 2009. One farmer who grows soybeans and tobacco just outside Harare and who asked that his name not be used because of the sensitivity nature of the issue says he got his 10 hectares in year 2000 as part of the land reform program. He says he and other black farmers have no collateral to get loans, but the former commercial farmers had established relationships with banks, so they teamed up and they get shares in the farming businesses. That way, he added, I know at the end of the season that I have something and the white farmer has something as well. The Commercial Farmers Union of Zimbabwe, which represents 6,000 farmers displaced from their land, told VOA the government is not responding to their request for authorization to farm. Critics of the land reform program say the policy was meant to punish the farmers who were supporting the political opposition. Detractors blame the land reform program for perennial food shortages. The United Nations says 1.5 million people in Zimbabwe may need food aid this year. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Communities in Liberia have been searching for ways to commemorate the almost 5,000 people who died there during the regional Ebola epidemic. Prince Colin reports for VOA from Monrovia, where families have begun planting remembrance trees outside their houses.
Plenty of people, the way their loved one, their friends, their relatives were buried.
A local radio campaign is encouraging Monrovia residents to plant kola nut trees and palm trees in their backyards to remember relatives who died during the Ebola epidemic. Orita Morris said a silent prayer as she planted a small palm tree for her father. Tears streamed down her face.
I had a time to bury him, to give him proper burial, and they took him away. That's the reason we planted a tree in remembrance of him. When I see the tree, I will always remember him. I will always think about him, how loving, how caring my father was.
The corpses of Ebola victims are especially contagious. To contain the virus, Ebola victims and people who died of unknown causes in Liberia were ordered quickly incinerated or buried by specially trained strangers, sometimes in unmarked graves. Michael Spear was head of the Ebola burial teams in nearby Maigibi County. He says they did what they had to do to stop the virus. Now he hopes the trees fill a void.
It fills in the vacuum, and it helps you that as that tree grows, your departed loved one or friend or relative grows into a new life.
The Search for Common Ground Peace Building Initiative is working with communities throughout Liberia recovering from Ebola. Acting Country Director Aaron Weir says each community is finding its own way to honor the dead.
In Cape Mount, where the Islamic practice, which is pretty much dominant in that part of the counties, chose to do a feast and to read special Quran and scriptures from the Quran in their way of remembering those who died. In another community, they built a monument. In Lofa County, they are putting together a symbolic grave.
Liberia discharged its last Ebola patient on July 20. The World Health Organization declared the country Ebola-free September 3rd. Prince Collins for VOA News, Monrovia.
And that report by Prince Collins brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Sudanese Girl by Jose Chameleon and Freedom Boys.
Keys Records. Hey, yo, yo. Freedom Boys!
Don't die, Jose Chameleon, Freedom Boys. Don't die, Jose Chameleon, Freedom Boys.
Ramba dam bam bam, Freedom Boys, Chameleon combination. Ramba dam bam bam, Southern Sudan, Uganda, rock the nation. Yala Uganda girl, dem bangu de yala yala ira talin deka o.
Sudanese girl, in Tumsay, Chameleon, Mohilu.
Nampena wangu. Banana.
We've been listening to Jose Chameleon and the Freedom Boys with their song Sudanese Girl. I'm afraid that's all we have for you today. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Banana.
Jagala Ugandan girl.